Hey, this is Mike McKenna, professional goaltender, heavy metal enthusiast. You're listening to Pirate Radio After Dark with Josh and Emily.
Welcome to Pirate Radio After Dark. It is episode 11. I'm Josh, Radio Pirate. It is, it's almost the end of July. I can't even believe that. Anyways, it's July 23rd, 2019, when I am finalizing this episode and putting it out to you guys. And last night we had Mike McKenna, professional goaltender and very, very big metal fan on the podcast. Mike recently played for our very own Lehigh Valley Phantoms here in Allentown and did some games with the Flyers this year as well. Mike's super nice guy again. Really appreciate it, Mike, coming on the show. And Mike's also doing a podcast himself that he started recently, and it's really, really phenomenal, actually. If you're a hockey nerd, definitely check it out. Mike's got some very interesting guests on and some legends too, which is very cool. So definitely check out his podcast, 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna. But tonight he's on mine. So we talk a little hockey, we talk a little black metal, we talk a little metal in general, and a good little chat. So I think you're going to enjoy it, especially for our local folks here, because we talk a little bit about our Lehigh Valley Phantoms here. And it was just a fun time to do this. So thank you to Mike, and we're going to get to that podcast in just a second. I do want to remind you, however, please follow us on social media. It's the best way to stay up to date on not just this podcast, but our radio show on 91.7 FM, WMUH in Allentown, as well as our radio show on iHeartRadio and WXLV. Super easy way to stay up to date on all three aspects of Pirate Radio After Dark. So our Twitter handle is @PirateRadioAD. Our Facebook is Pirate Radio After Dark, just like the page there. And then Instagram, it's @PirateRadioAfterDark. So add us on those. And if you haven't already, whatever platform you're listening to this podcast on, because we're on 8 different ones currently, and there'll be 9 or 10 very soon, just subscribe to us. And if you like us, leave us some love, leave us some comments, reviews, all that good stuff. We appreciate it. It's been very successful so far, a very positive response so far. Tomorrow on the show, I will be interviewing Colin from Circa Survive. We are going to be talking about a little bit about music and Circa Survive, but more so, Colin has a very different non-mainstream approach to treating mental health, and I really am curious to talk to him about it. So you're going to hear all about that when I release the episode later this week. So yeah, it's been a busy week. We did the Silver Sun interview earlier this week, which is out, so check that out. We just released that yesterday, and then today we're doing Mike McKenna, and then tomorrow we're going to have Colin. Colin's probably not going to go up right away, give it a day or two, but it will go up. Like I said on the last podcast, we're going to have some other guests on soon. We're having David Liebehart of Tim and Eric. Awesome show. Great job. We're also going to have Carly from Slingshot Dakota. And we got a couple other people in the works, so I'm very excited about that. We might have Chris from Motionless in White. We'll see what's up with that. But I'll keep you guys posted. So it's been fun doing the show so far. Keep supporting it. Keep listening. I've talked enough. Let's get on with it. Here is Mike McKenna, professional goaltender and professional metalhead, right here on Pirate Radio After Dark. Real quick, I also want to mention we had some interference with the phone. It was only happened about twice, I think, in the podcast. We get some crazy storms here in Pennsylvania, so bear with us. There's a couple spots in the interview that get a little glitchy. We did the best as we can to edit that.
So welcome to Pirate Radio After Dark, episode 11. I got Mike McKenna here today doing a hockey podcast this time. It's either music or hockey. You never know what you're going to get on Pirate Radio After Dark. But welcome, Mike. Thank you for calling into the show.
My pleasure. I think you're going to get a little bit of both tonight. So it's
yeah. you're the guy that's got both.
That's right. I'm the dual citizen of the interest, I guess you could say. Yeah, I've been a metalhead for years and years now, so plenty of experience in both fields.
Well, I'm very excited to talk to you about that, especially black metal tonight. I don't usually get to talk to too many guests about that.
Well, it's rare to find people who are into it, and when you are, it tends to be something that you really, really enjoy. I think it's pretty rare that you find someone who just dabbles a little bit in it. You got to be pretty into metal in general to be able to find something like a subgenre like black metal and among the other ones. But yeah, I like it an awful lot. It's right in my wheelhouse.
Perfect. Well, I think we'll have a nice little podcast here. So first of all, I want to say congrats to the St. Louis Blues. That's got to be awesome for you that your hometown team won the Cup this year. So how is that out there right now? I'm sure you guys are still celebrating.
Well, people are. I mean, for me, honestly, though, I've had kind of a disconnect with being a fan of that team for years now, because after you do 15, you know, 14 years worth of pro hockey, you, like I say, you lose that fandom, I guess you could say. You know, I've been through so many different organizations at this point that you kind of become loyal to whoever's paying you at the time. And there's still the hometown draw to it, though. I don't want people to think that, but, you know, I wasn't painting my lawn with blue notes and getting Blues tattoos on the lawn. I was really just more happy for my hometown of St. Louis and all my friends that have suffered for years thinking that they're never going to get a cup and always being a good team and never getting quite over the hump. And some of my friends that still play on the Blues, you know, so very, very happy for all of them. And it was a lot of fun to be able to tag along for the ride, writing for NHL.com, doing articles for them, and doing some media hits along the way. That was really a blast to do.
Yeah, and that kind of, you know, segues into the thing I wanted to talk about next. Obviously, you're doing your podcast, which is awesome, and I listened to about 4 episodes so far, and I really love it. Today, I listened to the one you did with Ray, the St. Louis Blues head athletic trainer, and that was a really, really good one. It was interesting listening to him talk about a lot of stuff, Before, I do have a question related to that, but, you know, how is the podcast going? I mean, I saw you've been getting a lot of listeners, a lot of downloads. It seems to be taking off quite well from my perspective, at least.
It's going good in terms, especially of the quality of guests. You know, I haven't had many people turn me down or blow me off. I mean, there's been a couple, but they'll remain nameless. But, I mean, really, I've had such a good response to it that I guess maybe I underestimated myself in terms of my name recognition. And people that you wouldn't even expect kind of were aware of who I was, you know. When I called up Glenn Hall, it was, sure, I'll talk to another goalie. And, oh, yeah, I saw that you played for a few teams this year. And, you know, Manuel Rayon was kind of the same way. Everybody that's in hockey doesn't get away from it. They keep following it. And so the quality of people that I've had on the show has been fantastic. My own interview ability, I think, is getting better, and my editing ability is really good because I managed to make them sound decent. But I'm a big audiophile, and I think part of that is the reason why I like metal so much, is because it's so challenging, and I have a really discerning ear for music and for audio. So I spend an awful lot of time editing to try to make them sound good, and that part's been fun, learning how to do it through different programs and even just learning to use some photo editing and video editing stuff just to make little promo quick hits that I can disperse. They're skills that I didn't have before that have been really good. So it's been growing steady, but probably need to find a partner if I really want to get this thing to take off, kind of like those guys over at Chicklets that have Barstool Sports propping them up. I need somebody like that to help help disperse it, because I think I've maxed out my social reach right now myself.
Well, I got to tell you, man, it sounds really good. The podcast is phenomenal, and I would not have known that this is, you know, a fairly recent venture for you, you know, especially being so consumed with your actual job. I think, you know, it's really, really nice. The two things that I wanted to just kind of throw out to you that I thought was really fantastic parts of the interview, when you had Jamie Kaharski on, you were talking about just how odd it is, you know, when they move to a 4-man system with the refs, just the level of respect. I don't know if that's the right word here. I forget how Jamie phrased it, but just how it's just changed the dynamic with the relationship between the players, the fans, the refs, and all that, and how that mixes together. But it was a very interesting listen. You know, I thought that was a really nice one. And then, you know, back to the one I heard today with Ray from the St. Louis Blues, he was talking about how the scary moments out there in hockey, and it got me thinking about, you know, you as a goaltender, probably, you know, every position obviously requires a ton of focus, but you in particular, what you do requires just almost, I don't even know the word for it, but just the intense amount of focus that's required to get through a game. You're out there the whole time. Is there any situation that's occurred where you've been out on the ice that was just completely scary, I guess would be the right word, in any game, that definitely you had to kind of take a step back and figure out, how do I get back in this game after seeing that?
I wouldn't say that I've seen anybody, you know, seriously injured to the extent that there was a life-threatening situation. But yeah, I've seen some pretty big injuries. And we had a player and a teammate of mine named Ali Skelly in college when I played at St. Lawrence that broke his neck in a game. And he skated off the ice. So none of us really thought anything of it. And it wasn't until afterwards we found out that he had really been injured pretty seriously. And it just turned out that he was in such good physical shape that it more or less didn't injure him worse than it could have. And it effectively ended his hockey career. So that was a pretty scary one. You know, anytime you see somebody get knocked out, that's terrifying. I saw that my first year pro. And I mean, I'd seen it happen in a couple street fights before. And those are always gross too. But when you see it happen on the ice, it's really scary because it's generally back at that day too. This is like 2005. So it's two absolute mutants on the ice. You know, guys that are like 6'5", 240, just throwing bare knuckle bombs at each other. And it happened in a game when I was playing for the Las Vegas Wranglers and we were playing against the Florida Everblades in Florida. And a teammate of mine was really not doing well in the fight, this guy named Kevin Bergen, and he popped up and just absolutely clobbered this McNeil guy on the Everblades. And I've never seen anybody hit the ice like that. And it was terrifying because the place just went from the loudest noise you could imagine to just dead silent. Because at that point, the guy's not moving. And that's just terrifying, you know. And he came to and everything was okay, but that stuff really makes you nervous. And I guess a close one also was there was a goaltender I played with named Jeff Frazee in the Devils organization, and he had his neck sliced. And I wasn't dressed that preseason game. I was in the stands for it, but I remember him coming off the ice and thinking, oh, this might be kind of not good, you know. And it turned out that he was probably a quarter inch from it, hitting something really serious in his neck, whether it was artery or jugular. And it just it kind of puts things in perspective. Also makes you take a look at the gear that you're wearing and try to make sure you're wearing things that are safe and will protect you. But it's a sport you never know what can happen. And my hat's off to those trainers and really even the refs, because a lot of times they're the first ones on the scene of things too. It's not easy.
Yeah, and it just reminds everyone, I think, whether you're a player or a fan, you know, from my perspective, just how tough of a sport hockey is. You know, it's something that I think people take for granted. And then when you see something like that happen, these are people's lives. These are real people. And it's scary stuff. And, you know, you guys are out there because you love the sport, but you're also out there to entertain and, you know, make a living and support your family. And, you know, it's just sometimes that gets lost in, you know, the roughness of things for fans, I think. But it's important to remind people of that stuff.
Yeah, people, it's just part of it, too, I think, is that it's all changed with fantasy sports. We've become such a commodity.
Mm-hmm.
People just want to horse trade us around, and it's really easy to forget the human side of things. But, you know, there's not that many guys that are playing just for the love of the sport. You know, we're playing to make a living out of this, to make as much money as we can, in some cases, to be flat out honest, you know, because there's a limited lifespan for it. And the lucky side effect is that we love the sport. You know, I love hockey, but I also love making a living playing hockey. You know, it's not just that I'm out there taking a twirl around the ice for nothing. You know, I mean, I went to college and got a degree, and quite honestly, hockey's has been my breadwinner, my best form of income for the last 14 years. So there's cost benefit back of my head that something could happen. You just never know. It's rare, but it could. And I guess really for me, the only thing I can truly say scared of were skates. Skates can really make me scared. You know, you think about what they can do, and I've tried to load up on as much cut-resistant materials as I can, but you just never know. I mean, there's 20 guys dressed, but there's at any time 12 guys on the ice, a couple of referees with Ginsu knives strapped to their feet. You know what I mean?
So, the deadly weapon. Yeah.
I mean, as Happy Gilmore so famously attempted, you know, to take a skate off and kill somebody, stab somebody with it. You know, bumps and bruises, they go away. Cuts are nasty. And now we're seeing it more and more with concussions too. And thankfully I never have had to battle any of those, but I see some friends that they're just debilitated from them. And that's always just awful to see.
Yeah, I've been following Dan Carcillo's story, and that's, you know, that's a whole, you could go into a whole discussion on that. But yeah, it's wild stuff. And it, again, it brings that human element back to the sport that, you know, sometimes, like you said, people get lost in, you know, the fantasy aspect and the entertainment aspect of things.
Yeah, and Carcillo's taken it to a whole different level. You know, a lot of times in hockey, everybody's been so hesitant to say anything or do anything, and he's not afraid of anything at this point. He's basically sacrificed a lot of jobs within hockey and the ability to keep making money off of it, but he thinks it's the morally right thing to do. And, you know, it takes a huge set of balls to do that, man, to essentially just blackball yourself. And my hat's off to him. I don't know if he's always gone about it very tactfully. He's been very forceful. But sometimes that's what it takes to get noticed. And I'm somebody out there that's willing to fight for it. Come in. There's just so many guys that have been struggling.
Absolutely.
And it's we all know what happened, and it seemed like it was no big deal at the time. And makes you think back to the three ring circuses, the juniors and the American League. And it was. I mean, it doesn't win you games. You know, like, you can talk about momentum all you want, but it doesn't put a buck in the net by beating somebody's ears off.
Yeah. So I got a question for you, Mike. You know, it was a real privilege having you here in the Lehigh Valley with the Phantoms and the Flyers this season. You know, and going to the fan events and stuff as a season ticket holder, you could see you really enjoy being around the fans. You know, I personally, in the last year, like my fiance and I, we are coaching the Phantom sled hockey team for the disabled kids. And that gave me a whole new perspective on, you know, working with you guys and the players. And, you know, sometimes it's frustrating for me to see how fans can behave towards you guys, whether it's in or out of the arena. You know, if you were to send a message to the fans, and again, you know, from my perspective, you seem like a guy that really enjoys, you know, talking and meeting the fans and, you know, just kind of living that life when you're in the arena. But what would you tell fans to remember when it comes to, you know, you guys, you're not hockey 24/7.
Man, if I had to just distill it down, I think it'd be pretty easy to sum it up by just saying, don't be creepy. Honestly. I mean it in the most honest and sincere sense that just we're human beings. Like, we're no different than anybody else. Like, if you run into us at the grocery store, we're buying oranges and pears like everybody else. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, yeah, we have a really cool job. It's not something everybody gets to do. But if somebody comes up to us and starts talking and they're just a normal person, we interact with normal people all day long in all types of walks of life. You know, I mean, I walked into a phone store today and that guy has no idea I played in the NHL, you know, it just doesn't matter. It's not what's going to come up in my train of thought or conversation. And that's the biggest thing, you know, like if we can tell somebody is just like truly interested in what we do and just wants to say, hey, and maybe have a couple words, totally cool. You know, just don't be creepy. That's really what it comes down to. And if you're, if you're a guy, it can be just guy talk, you know, if you're a gal. I mean, like, wandering hands are not a good thing. Believe it or not, that's actually happened to guys before. It's actually kind of infuriating that it's almost like we're just this piece of meat that's on a pedestal at some points, you know. And I know that it's kind of funny because it's the reverse of what's so often associated with, you know, sexual misconduct and stuff. But we've had those moments as players where a female fan's gotten a little bit overhandsy and it's like, oh, you know, you get the willies. And it just makes you know exactly what women have gone through when men are like that, you know? So it gives you an appreciation for what's right and wrong in life, I guess. But really too, I think that fans should know that we truly enjoy positive interaction. And it's really, really cool when we see fans come into games, you know, like things like the signs and the chants and the creative stuff that happens that's kind of unique. We love that, you know, and it's always really cool to see.
That's fantastic to hear. And I really appreciate you being open and honest about all that. You know, it's so frustrating to me sometimes just to see how people act. And I'm a therapist. That's what I do for a living. So, like, I really watch human interaction. But it's interesting. But it also makes me really happy to hear that you guys are into, you know, when the fans kind of go all out during the game and get into it and, you know, the signs and all that stuff. It's a different thing. And for me, like, as a fan, that's a release. And to know that you guys appreciate that and feed off that, and it's not just, you know, what the announcers are saying or the, you know, the press are saying, like, that's fun to hear. When you, for your time in the LV here, what was one thing you took away that, you know, you've been on quite a few teams. What was one thing you really liked about being in the Lehigh Valley here?
I think in terms of talking of fans and the arena and the experience and things, not just teammates, you know, like you can kind of answer generically to teammates because yeah, a bunch of good guys, like, well, that's just kind of hockey, you know what I mean? You go from room to room, and yeah, they're all a bunch of good guys for the most part. Like, there's a couple of bums out there that you wouldn't want to run into, but for the most part, everybody's cool. But I think that what I took away from Lehigh Valley is that I'd played there an awful lot before I became a Phantom, but I just think that the city has really embraced, and the whole area really has embraced hockey so well. And it's always a crapshoot when you come to a new community. You never know if a team's going to be able to sustain it. And so far they have. And it seems like to me, it's so visible in the community that when you are out around town, you see people in Phantoms hats and shirts, and it feels like people are vested in the team. And as players, that means a lot to you because I've played in cities where they don't have a clue who you are in the minors. You know, like I played in Lowell and it was friends and family. Like nobody knew who we were at all. And maybe it's kind of an ego-driven thing where it's like, man, I'm playing pro hockey. Why doesn't anybody know about us, you know? But it's just really, really special to play in a city like you know, Allentown, Lehigh Valley, that gets it, that really thinks it's a big deal. And it is. I mean, it's the next best league in the world. There's guys who are going to be in the NHL that have been in the NHL that are headed there. It's great hockey. And you know, it's really cool when you go to a market like that because you see what Hershey's done for years, and they've kind of been the archetype, and there's so many others that are really kind of close to that. So it was really nice to play in a market like that.
It's a really fun town and fun city, and yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. What hockey's done for Allentown, you know, they're trying to revitalize the city. It's been great, and it's been definitely a good starting point for things, and it's nice to hear, you know, you as player that's traveled around seeing that, you know, in your short amount of time here. I have one question from the fan base because I had put this out there online. So as far as fans banging on the glass, what are your thoughts on that? Because there's been discussion in the fan base about if that's rude or not during the games.
I don't think there's any etiquette at a game. I don't think anything's rude. I can tell you, though, that when I watch a hockey game and I see somebody standing up banging on the glass, my instant reaction is, look at this guy. That's kind of what I think, you know, because it doesn't do anything to the game whatsoever. It just proves that you have a huge pile of testosterone and you're really excited. And, I mean, and hey, man, if you want to do it, that's fine. No problem. Bang to your heart's content. But it's not going to affect us on the ice at all. So it's one of those things that is – it's hard to describe because I know people that sit on the glass almost feel like it's this, like, maybe rite of passage or necessary behavior that I'm on the glass and I'm going to beat on it. It's in front of me. I have to beat this glass. This is what's going to happen. And it's just one of those kind of humorous thing parts of the game. But to me, the really fun part of people on the glass is when somebody sits their beer right on the ledge and you get the beer ejection. When one of those things goes skyward, that's my favorite thing. And I'll be looking, like, at games that I don't dress where I'm looking down the bench and looking into the crowd, I'll see one or two sitting up and I'll just be waiting for that moment. And if it ever comes and that thing goes, I have to bury my head in a towel laughing because it makes me so happy to see. It's the greatest thing when a beer gets ejected from the dash.
And it happens almost every game because there's always someone their first time on the glass and they don't realize, like, those boards have give and that beer's going if someone hits there. But yeah, that's always fun to watch. We're row six, so we get to watch that happen to all the newcomers.
And you guys are, you're kind of in the splash zone though, so you got to be ready.
We haven't been hit so far, but yeah, definitely. And between that and the pucks, you always got to have your head on a swivel. But you know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, pucks. I mean, to be truly honest with you, I don't know why we don't have netting all the way around the rink. I really don't. I mean, I get nervous about that. I've seen pucks go into the stands and really hurt people.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody wants to see that. I mean, I've seen pucks hit infants, you know, and that's just awful. And it was one thing that when I had kids, I always wanted my wife to sit in the ends behind the netting, no matter what,
yeah.
Because whether you're paying 100% attention, the puck moves fast. And
yeah.
Sometimes you can't get out of the way of those things, and they're going to do damage. I mean, the edges of those things, they cut everything that they hit. So I'm honestly surprised that we don't have netting all the way around, and not just, you know, for common courtesy safety, but for insurance reasons, you know. I mean, I think it's just like one calamity away from that changing, kind of like baseball seen recently extending netting out to the foul lines.
Yeah, I'd say it'll definitely happen in the future. There's no way it couldn't with, you know, just lawsuits. And, you know, I've seen so many people get hit just in my time here with the season tickets in the Lehigh Valley here. So I did want to ask you, I was thinking about this earlier, and it's like kind of two-part question, I guess. So defensive dream pairing, you know, first question is guys you have played with. You know, who would be the two guys if you could have them out there the entire time backing you? And then two guys from any point in history of hockey, whether they're alive or not, played with them or not, doesn't matter.
It's a great question. Requires a lot of thought. and I've played with some unbelievable characters over my years, you know. I mean, I think of guys that would be on my forever team. And that can be people who I've played with on a lot of different clubs or people that I've just remained friends with. And I mean, I think of Scott Ford, who's an assistant coach in Milwaukee now, and Andrew Campbell is still playing. But I think the one guy that I'd have to have on my blue line would be Brent Ragner. And Brent Ragner and I played in Peoria together. We played in Portland together. We played in Springfield. We played in Florida, played in Texas together. And our families, our young families, our kids kind of grew up together. And I think the world of him. I think he's an incredible human. I think he's a hell of a hockey player, offensive, defensive, you name it, played the game the right way, and just an amazing guy. And so I would choose him probably first in my defensive draft. And for another guy that I've played with, boy, it's so hard to say. It really makes you think when you've been on 15 different organizations.
Why I picked this question.
You're right. I mean, I'm trying to think of over the course of my career, you know, who you'd give the puck to, and you knew it was going out of the zone, no problem. They were going to the other end. And there's just, man, there's been so many guys that have been so good that it just makes me easy to default with somebody who I enjoy playing with, you know, and a good tandem with Ragner would be an Andrew Campbell or a Scott Ford. You know, these old relics of the game that could dish it out as well as anybody, but you also knew we're going to take care of the puck and be responsible and be able to lead people and do the right things to be on the winning side of it. So maybe that way, that'd be a good answer to have, I suppose. And time, though, I never got to see Bobby Orr play. So if he was truly the greatest defenseman ever and maybe the greatest player ever, I'd sure like to have him on my team and just see what he could bring. And it'd be cool to go back in time for him too, though, because that was such a different period of hockey and of goaltending. And I'm kind of a historian of it in that I really enjoy digging back through the archives. So I'd have to take Orr. And then, man, if you wanted to pair him with somebody, I'd take Chris Pronger, just the meanest bastard imaginable that – went to what, 3-4 cup finals, won the Stanley Cup in Anaheim. Man, he's a grumpy guy that you knew was going to take anybody down in front. That'd be a pretty good pairing, I think. Maybe Orr and Pronger. And
I like
a
that.
Very, very, very close runner-up would probably be Al MacInnis.
Nice.
And it's kind of the same thing I tied into with Ragner and as other guys. And Al MacInnis is just a hell of a person, and obviously his reputation as a player precedes him, but definitely a guy you'd want to have on your team, especially with that shot.
I like it. So I got one last hockey question before we get into the medal stuff. This has been on my mind. So when I first reached out to you right after the season ended about coming on the podcast, I congratulated you on your seeming to the fan base last game, and you said you weren't done. Care to elaborate on what that meant? Because everyone in PPNL Center took that as that was your last game.
Well, I didn't know if it was going to be my last game, and I really still don't. And I think really the reasoning was that I didn't want to slam the door on something. I didn't want to skate off the ice that night and think a month later that I was making the wrong decision and I had buyer's remorse and I started freaking out because I thought I should still be playing hockey. I think that's the biggest reason why. And part of it too is, quite honestly, it's financial, man. Like, it's not like I've made 30 sheets and I can go live in Maui the rest of my life like some of these superstars these days. I mean, I've made a pretty good living and I've got a bit of savings and I'm debt free, but I'm not rich by any stretch. You know what I mean? Like, and rich is a very subjective thing to say. Okay. So I hope I'm not sounding egotistical or anything in that way. But yeah, I mean, if it came down to this year and somebody offered me a contract I couldn't say no to, I mean, I might play hockey. That's what it comes down to. But there's definitely going to be clarity, though, before the season starts. And if I'm not playing hockey at the start of the season, it's definitely over, and there'll definitely be a proper announcement. And those are things I've all thought of. But it really came down to I wasn't willing to slam the door on it, but I think at that moment, and really still at this moment, I've been leaning really and thinking heavily towards retirement.
Well, I appreciate you answering that honestly. And I got to tell you, whether that was your last or not, it was a great way to end the season. It was a rough season here in Allentown. And, I think that game was the one to remember from the entire year. And you were a major part of that, if not the entire package that night. So it was a lot of fun to watch as a fan. I know no one's going to forget that for a long time to come. So whether that was your last one or not, we want to thank you for that on behalf of the fan base.
Yeah, thank you.
That was very cool.
You know, it kind of weighs heavy on me too, because it was such a perfect game like that in terms of, if it were to be my last game, I mean, coming back, winning 3-2 in a shootout, making the last save, all those types of things kind of play into your decisions, because it's not very often you get to write a fairy tale ending and ride that unicorn off into the sunset. You know, I mean, let's be honest. Right. I mean, most of the time you get hurt or you lose in playoffs, and very rarely does it go out the right way. So that's weighed heavy on my mind quite a bit, but I really do want people to understand Lehigh Valley and really have great memories of that, even though it was only a month and a half. I felt like, you know, I was connected to people at that point. And earlier I forgot to mention just how good of a job ownership does too, and the front office there. I mean, having people that are committed that really want something to work, and they take care of the players and try to help them in any way they can, that goes a long way. And that's a big reason why you see a lot of, quite frankly, a lot of veteran players that really want to play in Lehigh Valley, because it has that reputation.
Doing the sled hockey thing, we've gotten, you know, to know Jim and Rob a little bit, and they really do care about that entire product in that arena in every aspect. And it's very cool to see that.
Yeah. And it goes a long way, because I've played for absentee ownership. I've played for great ownership. And you see everything in between. And when you have strong ownership, everything kind of branches off from there. And it's a lot easier to have success on and off the ice when you know you have full support like that.
Absolutely. So let's talk metal. I read somewhere a long time ago that you were not a fan of the early days of black metal. When I say that, you know, Burzum, Mayhem, Dark Throne kind of stuff. Is that accurate or not?
I would say that I don't really dig back into it very often to listen to it. And I think some of that really, really dirty, punky lo-fi, awful sounding stuff. Like the production was so bad with the buzzsaw guitars. That's kind of hard for me to listen to, the really early stuff. So really up until about, I don't know, 94 is when it, to where it was more acceptable to have better production on your music and actually have some discernible words as opposed to just shrieks and growls. But oddly enough, though, I really like Bathory. I like Venom, the really old early stuff, you know, and those were huge influences on the black metal scene. So, and I like modern Darkthrone a lot, and I like some of the older Mayhem. So I think that it's just really some of the really early primitive stuff didn't do a whole lot for me. But by like 93, 94, 95, when Satyricon started making stuff that was like the Nemesis Divina album is just perfection. And then Immortal and Dissection and those types of bands were making really, I wouldn't say progressive, but really kind of clean sounding in terms of production and riffs and catchy almost, you know, and not quite as just slapped together punk. We're trying to just outdo one another and how ghastly we can be. There was actually that bit of musicianship that came in by that point.
And that goes right along with you saying you're an audiophile. So that makes total sense then.
Yeah, like, well, I'll give you the best example of it. Like the first Emperor album, which is supposed to be one of the greatest of all time, right? Is, and I think, is the first one In the Night Side Eclipse?
I believe so, yeah.
I'm trying to think of the chronological order of them, but honestly, I don't really like the first Emperor album very much. Second album, love it. Anthems of Welcome at Dusk, amazing. Third album, amazing. But the first one to me was just kind of okay, you know, and again, it just didn't have that real like riff-based catchiness that some of the later albums had.
So did you check out the Lords of Chaos film that came out recently by any chance?
I haven't. I've read the book, but I heard that the movie was just kind of like loosely fictionalized, and I'd read some pretty disparaging things on it. So I haven't watched it. I suspect I will at some point, but not now.
I think it's definitely worth a watch. I was curious if you had seen it yet. We recently watched it and I actually enjoyed it. You know, they make it very clear. It says based on truth and lies, unless you're looking at the DVD right now, it's sitting here. But yeah, it's definitely worth a spin if you're into the scene. It gives some insight into just how bizarre and dark things were back then.
Those guys were committed, weren't they? I mean, and I don't mean committed in a sane asylum. I mean, they were really committed though to what their vision of the art was. I don't think burning old Norwegian churches was really the right way to go about that. But you do kind of have to admire people who were trying to take this old pagan belief set and bring it back and thinking that their customs and beliefs and everything had been taken and they were essentially trying to reclaim stuff. I guess there's some I don't know. It takes a lot of balls kind of going back to it, you know, but that whole scene was, it was completely bizarre. And it seemed like it was almost just this game of one-upsmanship for a while where, you know, they're just trying to be, you know, ghastlier or more morbid than one another. And I think it reached that boiling point where they all kind of realized this is ridiculous, you know. And, you know, half either went to jail, a couple died, and then the rest of them all grew out of it seems like.
Yeah, it's truly wild. I don't know if there's any more committed scene of music to their cause and their focus than that early scene in Norway. I mean, it's just it's wild. But yeah, I always try to wrap my head around that. I mean, it's respectable that you loved your art that much, but the things that occurred were definitely not so respectable.
No, and you think about death metal, like straight up death metal. That's to me, straight up death metal has always been kind of tongue in cheek.
Yep.
In a certain way. And I think it's just been almost like horror movies. I think that's kind of been the equivalency of what it is. Whereas black metal for that brief period was about as real as it got, which is pretty freaky to think about. And I'm glad that it's progressed to the point today where it's really just become kind of a form of expression and a theatrical thing, with the exception of like Varg Vikernes, who's still way off the way off the reservation, you know what I mean? So, yeah, it's different time, different era for sure. And it's sad to see that it really claimed a lot of really good musicians too, though. I mean, I think that Jan Nadvig, who is of Dissection, I mean, that guy really did some terrible things. Came back, tried to reinvent his career, and you could tell he's just a lost soul, really. But man, did he make two incredible albums. Like, I mean, The Somber Lane and Storm of Light's Bane are probably my two favorite black metal albums, two of my favorite albums ever. And I'm always kind of conflicted that somebody who could be capable of terrible things was the person that wrote these. And it's always, it's something I've kind of struggled with in my own mind, whether it was even okay to be listening to these because of the person that created it sometimes.
I hear you. That's how I am with Burzum, because I actually do like Burzum as far as the old lo-fi stuff goes, but he is just insane and not the best person, especially it seems to be getting worse. I was following some of his YouTube stuff and they've actually taken it down now, but that's a whole other story.
Yeah. Well, I think if you're a person of good enough moral conscience, you can disassociate with these things enough to know that it's almost your release and it's your form of entertainment. And there's plenty of people in the world that have done bad things that we've all watched and listened to. And it's, if you're going to try to be a moral purist, you're going to have a hell of a time in this world finding anything to like. And I've kind of come to that conclusion. It's almost in some ways relates to how I deal with friends and politics and stuff like that, where a couple of years ago, I came to the conclusion that I have friends who I am disgusted by their political beliefs. I'm mortified by what they think, but they're my friends. And you know what, man? They're my friends. That's what it comes down to. And I just don't bother talking about it. I know I'm not going to change their opinion. So social media wars and all that stuff is well past me. I just don't care anymore. They're my friends. And as long as they don't do something that's truly reprehensible, I don't care. You can believe whatever you want. Like I say, as long as you're not doing anything that's going to hurt somebody else.
I think that's an awesome way to live. And it's so hard these days to, you know, not get wrapped up in that stuff. But I'm with you 100%. You know, it's almost in a sense, you know, and I don't want to say my friends are my enemies, but, you know, if I don't agree with things with them, it's just kind of like keep your enemies closer and hopefully, you know, good things from you rub off on them and vice versa. And people just get better and smarter and healthier.
Yeah. Well, I think at its core too, I mean, you can still, regardless of someone's beliefs, decide for yourself how good of a person they really are.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and there's a certain limit too. You know, there's some people out there who I'm friends with who really aren't great people, but again, they're still my friends and it's not like they're doing anything that's terrible. You know, I mean, they're not going to find themselves in jail at any time, but some of the moral choices and stuff, but I mean, it's just who they are and they can live their own life. And if I enjoy being around them and they're not hurting me, that's kind of what I've come to, you know. You just have to make your own decisions and live by it.
So you mentioned a lot of, you know, bands that to most people, if they're only listening to mainstream metal, they wouldn't even know the names. What were your gateway bands when you were younger that got you out of, you know, the Slayer and Metallica stuff that everyone knows?
Great question. And I explain this a lot, and it's hard for people to wrap their head around. So by saying gateway bands, you're dead on. And actually, like Slayer and Metallica probably were gateway bands for me in a lot of ways. I think Metallica's Black Album was one of the first I ever owned. I'm born in 83. That came out, I think, in 91, I want to say.
Yeah.
And so really, when I was a kid, it was whatever I listened to or whatever I'd see on MTV or hear on the radio. So I grew up in a household of classic rock. My dad listened to the Stones and the Beatles and Led Zeppelin, and I still like that stuff a lot. I mean, if I'm not listening to metal, if I'm in a car, I'm probably listening to classic rock. I don't like modern rock, except for a few bands that I think are authentic. But in any case, by that point in my life, when I was 10, 12, 13 years old, I was listening to all the grunge bands that had come out, whether it was Nirvana, Smashing Pumpkins, Alice in Chains, and Metallica even kind of got lumped in that era from the early 90s. And that was really my formation of liking rock music and heavier rock music. And it went from there to hearing Deftones on the radio in 95. And that was something completely different for me to hear. And I loved it. And they were my favorite band for years. And so that kicked into the new metal craze that everybody in my generation was into. And so I had like that 5 or 6 year span where everybody was wearing JNCOs and black shirts and just like, you know, bunkering into Hot Topic and at the mall. And so I listened to all those bands you can imagine, Deftones, Korn, you name it. But I started to awaken from my slumber really when I heard Slayer and Fear Factory at Ozfest in like 97 or 8. And that changed a lot of things for me. I remember seeing the pit for Fear Factory and thinking somebody was going to die. It was about 98 degrees. There were people who were absolutely tripping out of their minds on drugs that you could just tell. And it was insanity. I'd never seen anything like it. And it was so powerful and it was so heavy. And the double bass was the one thing I remembered because I really hadn't heard that before. And so that was kind of it for me. As soon as I heard them, I just started to get heavier and heavier. And then quite honestly, when I got to college and I could download, it just went crazy because this is 2001, 2002. Napster's just lived and died. Audio Galaxy comes in. Direct Connect comes. And I mean, I could download 40 gigs of music in 40 minutes. And it was just a fire hose of stuff. And I will tell you, though, that I spent quite literally thousands of dollars on music, though, because I'd download these albums, love them, and I'd want to buy them. So to me, it was a good thing because I found so many new bands, but that's what got me into the heavier stuff. Like I said before, I found Satyricon, Immortal, Dissection. I found all the old thrash bands that I still love, Testament, Exodus, down the list with those guys. And I found just so many different bands, grind bands, death metal bands. Swedish Melodic Death was another gateway for me with In Flames and Arch Enemy. And then even the American bands like Shadows Fall and Lamb of God, they were all coming out at that time, Killswitch Engage. So there was a lot of new stuff coming out. And really by 2002, when I heard bands start to solo again, all that new metal stuff and the grunge stuff was kind of dead to me. And I went down the heavy rabbit hole really hard.
Nice. Got time for one or two more questions real quick, or are you good?
Yeah. Yep.
Cool. So just wanted to know, will you be having any musicians on your podcast, any bands on your podcast? I know it's very hockey focused, but are you thinking of diving into that as well?
I've really thought about that, and it'd have to be the right person. I think the most likely candidate, though, would be Brian Slagle, who owns Metal Blade Records. Brian's an absolutely huge, huge hockey fan. Like, we're talking like 2,000 or 3,000 jerseys hockey fan.
Wow.
And we've become really good friends via social media. And now I've hung out in person, I don't know, half dozen times, and he's truly a good friend of mine. We call each other talking about different things with hockey and metal, and he's definitely going to be on the podcast for sure because people need to hear about his background. I mean, he's owned teams, he's owned jerseys. He had a big hand in the old Central Hockey League. Really, really interesting guy. I mean, and on top of that, he signed Metallica in 82 before they'd even created a song because him and Lars were buddies. but otherwise, I mean, I think – I know Johan Hegg from Amon Amarth pretty well, in terms of that we've hung out and, we at least have chatted a couple times and all of those guys are big hockey fans, and Johan would be really cool to have on, especially with the Swedish angle, and his wife actually teaches goalie yoga in Sweden. So he'd be a really good candidate. Yeah. He'd be a really good candidate. I know there's others. I know Phil Demmel, currently of Violence, formerly Machine Head. Phil is a massive, massive Philadelphia Flyers fan, and talked to him while I was with the Flyers at one point this year. So he might be a cool person to have on too. So hopefully, but I still got to get a bunch of old goalies and a bunch of other relic hockey players out of the way first before I start branching out too much.
Well, that's very cool. So with the radio show I do, I do a new music show. So is there anything that's come out recently that you would suggest people to listen to as far as stuff you're into, as far as new releases go?
The stuff I've been to this year, I kind of go in years,
mm-hmm.
The new Whitechapel I think is really good. I'd never mm-hmm. really been a big fan of theirs, until this album, but this album's really progressive. And I think that's kind of what I look for. I look for something that's got a little bit of little, something different that keeps me, it's compelling to me, their songs are all varied up a little bit. There's different paces. It can be really heavy at times. I like their album a lot. Amon Amarth's new album, killer. Everything they do, I love. There's just no way around it. That thundering double bass Viking metal is just cool to me in every way, shape, or form. There's a band called Hate from Poland, a very
yep.
simply titled band, Hate. And they're kind of that black metal, death metal hybrid from that you see from some of those bands over there, kind of in the Behemoth, Vader type of stuff. Their new album's really, really good. I've listened to it a lot lately. Allegian for progressive metal, super, super good. They're the latest album is amazingly technical. Like if you're really into riffs and solos, that's right up your alley. So that's just kind of a small listing of things that I've been listening to a lot lately. And I know I'll find more as the summer goes on. The new Abath album, can't forget him. And he's going to be coming to St. Louis. I'll probably see him later this summer too. But band from Philly called Devil Master. They're on Relapse Records. Their album's really cool. So yeah, that's kind of a sampling of what I've been listening to for new stuff lately.
Nice. We played the Hate and Whitechapel records on air so far, and they definitely, I agree with you on Whitechapel. I was never a fan, but the new one's good, and that Hate record's really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm usually down for anything that's kind of got some, you know, black metal influence with a little bit of progressive and just different ideas to it. And it's probably why I've liked bands like, you know, Enslaved and stuff like that, is it's just kind of different, you know. It's enough to keep my ears perked up. And you know, kind of like a couple of years ago, God the Throne had a really good album that was kind of the same way. It just was a little bit different sounding and stood out from the pack.
Nice. So I don't want to keep you any longer. I know you got to go, but thank you so much, Mike, for, you know, coming on. And if that was your last game, thank you for playing in front of my hometown. And if it's not, I wish you the best with whoever you're on next year. And where can people find the podcast? And, you know, whatever you want to say about that, here's your plug.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on. It was a blast to talk hockey and metal. It always is. I could go on forever about both topics. My Twitter handle's at MikeMcKenna56. McKenna in game. That's my live Twitter account for NHL games and playoffs, and that may end up branching into regular season this year. And my podcast is called 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna. And so you can find that on anywhere you get your podcasts, whether it's Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts. It's available on all those, and it's got its own Twitter handle, 6 Degrees MM, and Instagram and all that stuff. So been super cool. I hope people enjoy it, and I'm always open. If you think you have somebody that you might like to hear from, let me know. I might have them on someday.
Very cool, and it's honestly an excellent podcast. I encourage all my listeners to check this one out. So I thank you, Mike.
So there you have it. That is our podcast with Mike McKenna. Thank you again to Mike. And please check out 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna on whatever podcast server you like the most. Like I said, check out the other interviews coming out and the ones we just recently released. So there's going to be a lot going on for the rest of the summer here on Pirate Radio After Dark. As usual, we're going to end with a random track from our band, The Bedroom Invaders. You can download our records for free. Just go to our Bandcamp, thebedroominvaders.bandcamp.com. Just like our radio show, our band sticks to no genre. All of our records are for free. If you want to donate, you can. And there is some merch on there as well. Another thing, we're going to eventually start getting to some more personal segments on here, I guess, with random folks. So if anyone has questions or wants to possibly come on the show, if you're using the Anchor app, there's a feature there where you can leave me a voice message. A couple people have so far. So if you just have questions or feedback, or if you want to come on the show with an idea, go right ahead. Reach out to me. Use the Anchor app, though. That is the easiest way to get in touch. For the podcast, as far as voice goes, you can always email me, pirateradioafterdark@gmail.com. So thank you, guys. Have a good night.